Hello and welcome to this episode of You Seem Interesting. I am your host, Danny Bruyer. Thank you so much once again, and as always, for checking out this show. It means the world to me. Thank you especially to my Patreon subscribers, patreon.com/funnydanny. Those of you that have contributed already, it means so much to me. So thank you guys so much. You are the engine that drives this little train. And if you're listening on other platforms, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, whatever, we just ask that you like us, give us good reviews, spread the word, and all of that good stuff. Keep checking us out at @Indrist_pod on the old Twitterverse, and good interactions there. So we've got plenty of cool guests upcoming in the works for you. This week, I'll be talking to an entrepreneur who is in a really interesting space. His name is Ted Sullivan. He is the former CEO and founder of a company called Game Changer. I want to get into what that really means as we go forward on this episode. He is both in the youth sports space as well as the tech space, two fascinating evolutions kind of converging into one before his company was purchased by Dick's Sporting Goods in 2016. He stayed on for a couple of years thereafter, but it is a really neat story, and I want to give that to you guys. But as we always do, we try to make it less awkward on this program. I have asked for money with different voices each week. I will keep up that commitment to you guys. So in order to encourage you to go to the Patreon page, I give you another impression. And this week, for absolutely no reason at all, Larry the Cable Guy.
See, let me tell you something right there. There's a number of websites you can go to. And a good one to go to is patreon.com/funnydanny. That's funny right there. He does jokes sometimes, but mostly he just talks to hear himself. And you can get involved with some money. Give him some money. That's funny right there.
Thank you very much, Larry. That is very kind and genuine. I know you are a huge fan of what I do. Okay, so let's get into it. Ted Sullivan is my guest this week. He'll join me in a few minutes, but I wanted to give you some background. So he founded a company in 2010 with a partner, and the company is called Game Changer. And I'll give you some of the background here in a second, but ultimately it led on a journey that's pretty rapid by almost any standard to them selling the company in 2016 to Dick's Sporting Goods. And Ted stayed on as CEO for a couple more years before gradually kind of bowing out and going to the sidelines, and he's still kind of hunting for his next project. He's got a couple things he's working on, but he's not allowed to talk about it. So he'll join us to talk about his Game Changer experience. So think about that arc. 2010, founded. 2016, bought and sold. So what does Game Changer actually do? This is a really interesting deal because it gets into the tech space, which we're going to talk about here in a moment. It also gets into the youth sports space. And Ted has a background in youth sports. He was a college and minor league baseball player, talented multi-sport athlete in high school. And he and his older brother founded a coaching for hire business called Head First Baseball. And then it's changed, of course, to the Head First Companies, Head First Camp. And they run a lot of camps, youth education, youth sports in and around the greater DC area. And now they're spread out even more nationally, doing camps with Major League Baseball teams in their towns, with some youth outreach and a lot. But Ted and his brother employed a lot of young people, including, by the way, yours truly. So as we were coming up as players, we were coaching some younger kids, and he was on sort of the forefront before this became very in vogue of kind of the coaching for hire business, which is now what youth sports is dominated by. We'll get into some of those numbers here in a moment, but it's staggering, some of the stuff that I found about how much money, it's kind of a sad thing, honestly, if we want to get into that, but how much money is now in youth sports. Instead of your local rec league and $100 for a box of baseballs and some umpires, it's now way more than that. It's become a 365-day kind of thing if you want to keep up with the Joneses. And Ted, he didn't invent that system, but he found something that makes a lot of sense for a lot of parents. So what Game Changer does is provide free software to coaches in exchange for, you know, a little bit of info, right? So it's a freemium kind of model. So Game Changer collects and manages a huge amount of pool of data. So the real stats, if you go to a Major League Baseball website, you go to ESPN, MLB.com, something like that, you can keep track of the stats of your favorite team. Well, that wasn't available for the little league level, for high school levels. It was all manual scorebooks and, you know, just a volunteer sort of tabulating those things. And here's Game Changer, the ability to do it in real time, right? So you can keep a digital scorebook on your iPhone, your iPad, etc. And at the end of the game, you'd hit submit. Boom, you got stats for that game. Michael went 2-for-5 with a double and a single and an RBI. Sam pitched 6 1/3 innings with 5 strikeouts, 2 walks, and only 6 hits allowed. Whatever it is, it compiles those stats. Then you get yourself compiling stats for that game, for the week, for the season, etc. So they started very small, and it now got to the point where they're partnered with Little League, the Cal Ripken World Series, Max Preps, Perfect Game, USA Baseball, all became partners really early on with this thing because it was so obvious that this need needed to be fulfilled and nobody had done that yet, right? Which is pretty amazing. To date, and this is the most recent data you can find, over 10 million games have been scored on Game Changer. 10 million. Think about all the youth sports leagues. Think about all the different Little League games. You know, if there's 20 games per season at all the different age groups, 10 million games. It's now the largest collection of sports data in the history of existence, which is pretty amazing. And it's only happened in such a short time because there's so much youth sports activity. So pretty phenomenal invention, right? But let's get into the tech space. Right now, apps are, you don't need me to tell you this, but on your phone, you've got a bunch. Some you use, some you don't. The most profitable apps are gaming apps. And some of those use the free-to-play model with the freemium model where you add on some of the things, purchases as you go. With 99 cents here, $2 here. You want a better car, a better outfit, a better armor, better whatever. You pay a little bit of money and that usually gets unlocked for you. That's probably, I would say, 50 or 60% of the money-making apps. But check this. Right now, there are over 3 million apps on Apple and Google Play. Android data is a little bit tougher to come by. But of those apps, 0.01%. I'll say that again. 0.01% of those apps make money or turn a profit. They either fail to make any money or come close to turning a profit. Only 16% of Android apps actually earn $5,000, that threshold. That's like only, you know, a fraction of a percent of YouTube videos get to 100 views or 1,000 views. Only a minuscule percentage earn $5,000, let alone turn a profit. So think about this. If your app is on the Apple Store or Google Play, 9,999 of them out of 10,000 are going to either fail or not end up making near enough money to cover your costs. But if you get it, if you hit, you get yourself part of this huge, huge, mega enormous industry. It's why people do it. It's why people will outlay the capital. It's why people will take a crack at dealing with developers and trying to market their idea and figure something out to get in on this space. Because apps generated over $100 billion in revenue last count in 2019. That's up 27% year over year. You've had that same kind of skyrocket style growth since really we had smartphones going back into the round, you know, 2011, 2012, 2013, it has looked like a rocket ship going up. Like Elon Musk is piloting that bad Jackson, right? Non-game revenue, okay, non-game revenue. So the games, remember, are a huge, huge chunk of this. Now, again, probably around $60 billion in terms of that $100 billion. Non-game revenue went from $3.7 billion in revenue in 2013 to over $20 billion in this past calendar year. Again, huge, huge rise, right? So it used to be that the games were kind of the only way to figure out how to turn a profit. This, the model that Game Changer used, again, that freemium, where there are subscription services available for a small fee to parents or people that wanted to keep track. So let's say you couldn't go to your son's game because you had to work on a weeknight or your schedule didn't allow it. You can follow just like you're following an MLB at bat type application with Game Changer. Pretty neat, right? Now to youth sports specifically. Okay, this is where these two things converge. There is a staggering rise of big money in youth sports. Youth sports is now a $17 billion a year industry. Experts predict it's going to be a $127 billion industry by the year 2026. Do your math. That's about 5 or 6 years from now, depending on when you're listening to this thing, right? Think about this. That wasn't the case not that long ago. But in order to keep up with the dramatic increase in participation, increase in talent around the world, increase in coaching, increase in facilities, the level of play at the highest levels have grown, right? It's the ball, no matter what it is, whether it's baseball, basketball, football, tennis, swimming, records are being broken. Athletes are better than they ever have. In order to keep up, parents who will do anything for their children are now willing to pay. The private lesson has become the norm. The extra coaching session has become the norm. In-school coaches, out-of-school work, you need to supplement everything that you're doing in your normal practice time with an outrageous amount of work off the field. That's to compete for a hugely, tightly limited number of college scholarships. That's really what this the end game is at the end of the day. We know about the college admission scandal, right? That was a backdoor where people paid a bunch of money to pretend to be on the crew team or the tennis team, whatever the heck it was. Less than 2% of high school athletes will earn a Division I scholarship. That's just the math. That's just how that works out. And so in order to kind of keep up and have give yourself an opportunity to be part of that, people are spending the money. This doesn't take advantage of that necessarily, talking about game changer, but just to give you an idea, there is absolutely money to be made in this space. Then you combine that with the app space. It's no wonder Game Changer was successful. And to talk about Game Changer and his journey, I'm going to bring you Ted Sullivan. Enjoy. Excited about my guest this week on You Seem Interesting. We went to high school together. We were teammates. We've been opponents. We've been everything in between. I've even worked for this guy many, many years ago. Ted Sullivan, CEO, founder of Game Changer. Teddy, what's going on, man?
How you doing, Danny? Great to be here, man.
It's a pleasure to have you. So before we get going, tell people about Game Changer. Where'd you come up with the idea? What happened? And kind of take me through the process.
Absolutely. And and former CEO, to be specific. So I'm not with the company anymore.
Yes, of course.
I guess founder stays with me. I get to carry that business card forever. But the idea came from I was working for a mobile technology company here in New York City. And in the evenings and on the weekends, I was coaching Little League. I would, jump in the subway and head down to the downtown Little League in the lower Manhattan, Tribeca area, and was coaching kids. I didn't have a kid, I wasn't married, didn't have kids at the time, but was volunteering. And, the story that I tell is, by day I watched this tidal wave of mobile crash on industries one after the other. And yet I would go and take on my role and put on my hat as Little League coach and had none of the tools and none of the benefits that I saw a lot of industries getting. And the reality is that there was a lot of problems that I thought could be solved by mobile software and this revolution that was happening in front of our eyes in, 2008, 2009.
It's ultimately what is Game Changer for folks that haven't seen it. It's almost ubiquitous now, Teddy, for those of us that do have kids and sort of, know the score when it comes to youth sports. But for folks that don't, tell people what it is.
Yeah. So Game Changer really does two things. It is first and foremost an app for scoring baseball and softball games. So we replace the old school spiral bound paper and pencil scorebook, and you is a really easy app for keeping score in game, pitch by pitch, play by play. The second thing it does is that as the game is being scored, obviously that device is attached to a network. We take that data that's being inputted by the scorekeeper and we turn it into a live animated view of the game in real time. So the best analogy would be something like ESPN Gamecast. It isn't a live video feed, but it's an animated view. And we also turn that into an actual radio, like a computer generated radio broadcast and all sorts of visuals and stats and a really compelling experience for mom, dad, grandma and grandpa, anyone who'd want to follow, a Little League game, a travel ball game, a high school game. And we have a lot of college teams as well.
It's really incredible. And it's so simple in its design because, of course, you would want this. And then you guys filled that void. So when you are, as you mentioned, you've got a job. Is this something where you're going, I'm going to be an entrepreneur? Or did you fall into this?
I had been bitten by the entrepreneurial bug a number of years before that. You mentioned in my intro that we worked together at one point for Head First Camps in the DC area, where my brother and I, when we were minor league ball players, spent the off seasons teaching kids, private lessons, group lessons, after school programs, teaching kids to play ball. As much as I loved working with the kids and the sports and instruction and educational side of it, I was really bitten by the entrepreneurial bug at that time. I loved the challenge of building the business. How do you market this program? How do you price it? How do you engage customers and create a better experience for them? How do you build the business? And so that was really, so right after my college days. So I had that desire to eventually get back to that. I had left and done a few entrepreneurial things, but not really starting my own. I'd gone to business school and then was working for this tech company I mentioned in New York, and started to have this itch to start my own thing. And that aligned with getting this idea while I was coaching Little League.
Is that something that you think you got the springs in your step to do that because of business school, or was that something else? Was that just inside you all the time?
No, yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily inside me all the time. I really go back to the pre-business school, that Head First Camps experience, where doing something that, of course, felt so comfortable to my brother and I, and to you, which is coaching kids, right? I mean, it was something that was relatively easy for us to do because we had played ball for a lot of our lives, and working with kids was a fun piece of that. I think that probably gave me the confidence. Hey, I can build a business. I now know how to build a business. Now there's a heck of a lot I didn't know, and I learned that the hard way, because building a software business where you're raising money from investors and all sorts of stuff that's outside of coaching kids is a whole different story. But I think I had that. I think it grew during that time of delivering a product that was actually, I felt so confident delivering, and in doing so created this confidence that, hey, I could actually build my own business.
How do you balance wanting to keep this? This is your baby, your thing. You invented this. It's your idea. It's your deal, with needing to take on investors and outside money, maybe whether it's outside influence or dilution of your own, ownership. I mean, how does that work? What's the balance that you have to strike there? And what was the hardest part about that?
Yeah, it's a great question, Danny. And I think for a lot of businesses, that is a really hard question, because the reality is they could choose to go either route of the business. So again, going back to the Head First business, all credit to my brother, who has now built that business for 20 plus years, but he and I own that business 100%, and there's no outside equity owners and no outside investors. And it's a great family business. It's done and to my brother's credit, grown nicely. Game Changer was a totally different type of business as a software business. And often software businesses are like this, where you need to invest significant amounts of capital, primarily into salaries of software developers, to build something before you can even generate your first dollar of revenue. It actually wasn't a decision of should I do this or not. There would have been no other way to build that business in any sort of reasonable amount of time. I'm first and foremost not a software engineer, so I had a co-founder who was an incredible software engineer, but that one we needed other people, which eventually became dozens of people building this. And so we needed to raise venture capital money, angel investor money, and sell a portion of our equity. So it sort of comes with the territory of that type of business. There are other businesses, of course, where it's a choice of one or two paths, and you come to that fork in the road and it's difficult. But for us, it's painful selling off a piece of your business, but you're getting a lot in return. It was the ability to actually build this thing with speed and scale.
So ultimately, you make that decision, and this is where you end up, obviously, in a very good place, because the product's incredible. Dick's Sporting Goods buys it a couple years ago, and it's by any measure a success story. You mentioned, though, that there's a lot you didn't know. What didn't you know that you know now, that I guess maybe if you did this again in some other capacity, not another amateur athletics scoring system, but if you did this adventure again, what would you do differently based on what you know now that you didn't?
Oh, man. The pod is not long enough for the list of mistakes made. And there were two mistakes we made that almost killed the business that we somehow managed to survive and get beyond. But there were two mistakes that essentially fall under the same category that I would say is one of the number one killers of small business, and in particular in businesses in this market of youth and amateur sports. The two mistakes we made, just to sort of quickly go over, is we started building a basketball version of our product in about 2012, 2013 time frame. Before that, even, we started building an Android version of our baseball product. So without getting into the details of it, we started kind of expanding customer base from our core. If our core was iPhone, iPad, baseball, softball, we thought we want to be bigger. We want to have a broader set of customers to serve. So let's build it on Android. That was a decision number one. And then later on, we said, let's build for basketball. Both of those decisions were the wrong decision at the time. And almost by spreading out our focus, almost killed the business at the time. And we actually retracted. It was two of the most difficult no-brainer decisions I've ever made, which is that we had an Android product, pulled it off the market, and infuriated a lot of Android users.
Wow.
We had a basketball product that was actually the leading basketball product out there, used by Under Armour and Nike tournaments and thousands of teams. But it was the cost of lack of focus on our broader business made it not worth it. We had to make the really hard call to pause both. We since then launched both later on when we were a bigger business with more resources to actually go into them. But the bottom line is it was too early. So getting to this number one killer of businesses, in particular in this youth and amateur sports market, is lack of focus. I think that people start typically with a product for a user in a sport at an age group. And way too soon or way too early say, oh, great, we've got a little bit of interest. Let's go expand to more age groups, to more sports, to more products, to more platforms, whatever that might be. And it ends up killing the business because of lack of focus.
So there is a right time to make those decisions, but you guys were too early. So it was the timing that was bad, yes?
It was the timing that was bad. I mean, I think there's the right time feasibly for anything, but all underneath this umbrella of decisions, of which there's countless more, of being overly excited about trying to serve, do too many things at once. And, you know, less is more, in particular with software, in particular in youth sports, where these micro segments of the market are so different, that less is more.
So I want to get into your journey a little bit. You pitch in college, you get yourself drafted. By any accounts, again, you get further than 99% of the people that pick up a baseball for the first time, or any amateur sport for that matter. And that's an amazing thing that I think a lot of people sort of overlook, right? So now once that's done, right, where the game told me earlier than it told you, you're not welcome here anymore. We got no uniforms for you. There's a 15-year-old that weighs 110 pounds, but he projects better than you, you sloth. Get out of our office. After that, you got to start your life. You got to do a real world thing, right? Go through your journey there to get to the point where you could be your own boss.
You know, that day, and we've all, you know, all athletes at every level have come to it. And it is a really difficult pivot in your life. And the reason why, you know, especially for folks that have, you know, spent a good chunk of their life playing and played at a high level like you did, we identify ourselves as ball players, as athletes, more than the fact you can't play anymore or that you haven't reached that next level. It's a change to your identity. And that is a really hard pill to swallow sometimes when you say, you know, first and foremost, the top of your personal resume for a big chunk of your life is, I am a baseball player. And that just gets erased. I was a baseball player. I no longer am a baseball player is a really hard thing. And, you know, for me, I got that call, you know, I'll never forget. I got that call from the Indians saying, thanks for the time, but, you know, we're going a different direction and we're releasing you. It took me a number of weeks and months to manage the sort of hit to my identity that I was no longer a baseball player. What did get me through was this feeling that I had, you know, to use the overused phrase, sort of left it on the field. You know, I believe that for folks that get to that point, no matter what it is, whether it's after 5 years in the big leagues or, you know, junior year of high school, if they haven't sort of given it their all, that is a really painful pill to swallow, because you have woulda, coulda, shouldas, which I could, at the point where I was, happily say I didn't have.
So then, career, that one ends. Identity, you got to change overnight, and people just expect you to kind of pick up. Just that journey to get where you got in terms of baseball and playing pro sports, give me kind of the next phase where you're going, okay, now I can work for somebody, but that's not really the end game here. And you turn yourself into your own boss.
Yeah. And you know, I think it goes back to that, that entrepreneurial, itch that I had. And I'd say that was becoming a second love in my life was this identity as an entrepreneur and the challenge. If baseball is a never-ending challenge where you're, you know, only as good as your last outing, only as good as your last at bat, there's a lot of similarities. You know, we could sit here and play the baseball analogy game, best baseball metaphor game with you know, running businesses. And so for me, I started to chase that down. And actually what I did before in between baseball and going to business school, actually went and worked for a family friend who was a very well-respected entrepreneur and kind of shadowed him and learned a lot from him. And I thought it was going to be kind of a 3 to 6 month thing. It actually ended up being 3 years where he was building a few little businesses and I was helping. And it was really incredible learning experience. It was like a pre-MBA for me. And then I decided, okay, I wanted to go add to this toolkit and went to business school. And so that was the thread that I continued to follow. I really felt like I needed this constant challenge, this constant mountain to climb. And baseball was that mountain. And then entrepreneurship became the mountain when baseball went away.
Give me a triumph. Give me something that could be somewhere along the way, like an end zone spike, an in your face, a touchdown dance. And then you may have already spoiled it with some of the things that you mentioned earlier, but give me kind of the low point.
Man. Okay. I can do that. Easter weekend, 2011, peak of the baseball softball season. And we had in 2010 and 2011, Game Changer growth during the spring and summer was just going bonkers. Like we could barely manage the growth. The servers were on fire. And it's a great problem to have. It's a high class problem, but it's still a stressful, you know, really stressful problem. And we'd have times, you know, 2 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon when everything would crash. And people couldn't log in and couldn't score their games. And those were really, really painful moments. But it was nothing compared to Easter weekend of 2011. And any technologists out there might remember that actually Amazon's cloud business on the East Coast of the U.S. Took a crap. And there was an issue where a bunch of their servers went offline. And as you know, for the non-tech folks out there, Amazon has a business where a lot of software businesses run on their servers. And so we were for, you know, about 48 hours over a peak weekend during peak growth time, the most, you know, arguably, at least in my mind, one of the most important moments of, you know, inflection points of our whole business. We were trying to get beyond the scratching and clawing and, you know, into being a real business and having customers trust us, and servers go down, and we were unsophisticated at the time. We didn't have backups. We didn't have, you know, what people would have is they'd have a different location backed up. So you'd roll over. Maybe it's 2 minutes of downtime and you roll over and you're up and rolling. We had 2 days of downtime. And I remember I was actually on an Easter trip with my wife's family in New Orleans. And everybody's celebrating Easter, lunch, everything. And I am, you know, holed up in the hotel room managing infuriated customers who have just gotten to the point of trusting Game Changer, left their scorebook at home, brought their iPad to the field, can't log in, can't use our product. And that was real. I didn't know if we were ever going to recover from that moment. It was still to this day, probably the lowest moment of my experience. So
I can imagine you're like, no, it's the Amazon servers. It's not us, everybody. Listen. And I'm sure everybody was very forgiving.
Yeah, and the reality is there are other people on the same servers, but we're sophisticated enough at the time to shift over and wear sort of a belt and suspenders. And we were just sort of flying where we didn't have that. And so it was just offline until things came back and we could get things fixed up. So it was a painful, painful Easter weekend in 2011. But, you know, there were a lot of high points. You know, the high points, to be honest, were less around things like the acquisition or big, you know, closing of fundraising or hitting revenue targets or anything like that. They were actually more individual The ones that I remember are really more individual interactions, either with customers. So for instance, I mean, as crazy as it sounds, I mean, we had several over the years, you know, heartfelt notes from a dying grandfather or grandmother in the hospital who would write me a note saying the last 3 months of, you know, as I'm fighting cancer, that my joy is the three times a week when I can follow my grandson or granddaughter on Game Changer. And so things like that, or someone writing from Afghanistan in a war zone, wow, saying, you know, I follow Game Changer from Afghanistan, you know, on our military base here. And I just want to, you know, thank you for how much joy that brings me as I'm missing my family. And, you know, my grandson or my son or daughter is playing Little League back in Missouri or back, you know, in California, wherever it might be. So it's the notes like that, that certainly resonate the most, over all these years, over the sort of the bigger quote headlines.
Yeah. And that's kind of the, lets you know that you're doing something right here. Yes, you're filling a need. Yes, there's a market share for you, but there's also a pretty nice service that takes place, which I think is kind of the rare perfect storm in, especially in tech. I think that's really well seen by you. That's really cool, buddy. I hadn't even thought of those angles, but you're right. Of course, that's intuitive. Give me a challenge or two that most folks wouldn't know outside looking in, right? Where you're, as you talked about servers, you talked about, you know, paying tech folks, because, you know, if you don't happen to be one, it can be a mega challenge. Give me some challenges that maybe regular folks wouldn't know about outside looking in.
One of the things we learned early on with GameChanger, and I think that we learned this in some ways the hard way, but learned it early enough that it really became one of our superpowers, is that, you know, GameChanger is a technology company first and a sports company second. We learned the hard way. And I mentioned some of those, you know, some of the growth we felt in 2010 and 2011. You know, for sports fans out there that understand the scope of, let's say, a Major League Baseball season. So, you know, there's about 2,500 games, you know, in pre-COVID and hopefully post-COVID, you know, about 2,500 games in a Major League Baseball season, all teams, all games, right? We would do, you know, like 10,000 simultaneous games at Game Changer and do 20, 30, 40,000 games in a day because of the scale at the youth, you know, high school and youth level. And actually managing that type of scale, taking, as I mentioned at the beginning of the call, taking the stats from an iPad on a field in the middle of wherever, throwing that up to a server, and then sending out that information to, whether it's Afghanistan, you know, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, wherever that might be, it was that is a hurdle, in particular when it's so seasonal. If you had, and I think if you had that problem all the time, you'd actually get really good at solving it. The problem is we didn't have that problem in October, November, December, or January. You start having that problem only when kids are on the field playing baseball and softball. So it's a very hard to prepare for those types of spikes in usage. And but the cool thing looking back when you got that kind of scale is Game Changer today, you know, has the largest collection of sports data, specifically baseball and softball data, of anyone in the world, and no one's even close. You know, we had, I mean, when I was there 2 years ago, we were well over a billion pitches logged. You know, so it's kind of a cool thing for stat heads, instead of a cool data set, but we had our challenges, no doubt, getting there and getting, you know, sort of solving those technical problems. And the way we did it, and I say we, you know, it was above my pay grade for sure to solve those problems technically, but we had very, very capable, you know, just incredibly talented, brilliant software engineers who came in, saw those problems, and eventually solved them.
Ted, this was awesome, man. Thank you so much for the time today. Congrats on all the success, and I can't wait to see what you do next.
Danny, I appreciate it, man. Keep up the good work. It's awesome listening to you on the radio, and I'm glad I get a pod to listen to as well.
Appreciate you, dude. Thank you once again to my guest, Ted Sullivan, founder and former CEO of Game Changer. I really like that conversation. That's neat. There's a spirit, I think, that a lot of folks can relate to, right? Everybody plays that game, right? If you want $1 million, what would you do? If you won the lottery, what would you do? And there's some folks that are so driven by that idea, not necessarily you know, winning a certain amount of money or you know, living on a beach somewhere, living on an island. But the idea of being autonomous, the idea of not working for anybody else. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to work for somebody, by the way. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be an employee and not prioritizing your work. There's nothing wrong with, I want to go to work, punch a time clock, come home, and my joy is found elsewhere. But some people are wired in weird ways, unusual ways. And I think, frankly, not to toot my own horn, I'm wired that way. I had regular jobs. I had to go to the office. I had to listen to people. I wasn't disrespectful. I didn't do anything crazy, but I did what I was supposed to do. But there was no joy in it for me. And I was so whiny and so selfish. I said, I got to do something that makes me happy every day. And I've been fortunate enough to do that. Again, I get to host a radio show in the city I grew up in, the Grant and Danny Show on 106.7 The Fan. Check it out, by the way, if you like me at all, or if you hate me, you can check it out too. You're more than welcome to. But, I host this podcast, I do stand-up comedy, I have found things that I love again. And the part that Teddy talked about, having to sort of quit being who you were because the world tells you you ain't that anymore, that's a tough adjustment. It's something that people don't really talk about once your athletic career ends. You've got to just sort of convert into this new being, and everyone expects you to kind of hurry up and do that, you know, lickety-split right away. But Teddy talking about the entrepreneurial spirit or the bug that he was bit with, I can attest to that. Just sort of following him from afar, he kept, he would go to work somewhere or he would go. I mean, I remember just sort of talking to his brother or him or, their friends of friends. And it's just, he just always kind of had that itch, right? Like the satisfaction that he got from starting that company with his brother that they built from, the ground floor up and just sort of, they're given hitting lessons in a Safeway parking lot in Gaithersburg and teaching a kid how to throw at some, rec field in Springfield, Virginia, or, parts beyond. They were growing something and it was theirs. And there was a tremendous satisfaction, I think, that Ted and others who can kind of relate to that experience got from that. So it's easy to say, I want to work for myself. I want to be my own boss. Well, the other part of that is you're responsible when it goes bad. And that horror story that Ted told, where they think they're on top of the world, it's 2011, they're, the servers are humming along and they got all these different games, and then boom, busiest weekend of the year. Not necessarily their fault, but they didn't know what they didn't know. Now you're responsible for it, right? I mean, think of now. I'm recording this during the time of COVID, during the time of pandemic. A lot of unanticipated things. A lot of people wanted to work for themselves. A lot of people wanted to start their own company, be their own boss. Well, now you're responsible for a lot of employees, possibly. You're responsible for furloughs and layoffs and all those terrible adult things that you don't think of when you're going, I want to work for myself. Right? It's one of those things where it is a double-edged sword, but it is a dream that they won't let die. And Ted is one of those guys. And he was, by any account, amazingly successful from idea to execution. Yes, there were some pitfalls, but he turned it into something pretty darn special. Love what he had to say about that. Loved his insight as well. Just sort of talking again about the athletic career of somebody. He's too modest to say it. I pumped it up a couple times during the interview, but he was a great player in his own right. So was his brother, by the way. His older brother went to Stanford, was in AAA with the San Diego Padres, and was a one phone call away from the major leagues for several years before kind of returning home and taking his business sort of into the stratosphere as it's going now. But so that time is over, and the work ethic doesn't die. You just got to find the new place to put it. And I thought that was really insightful. Again, talking about his journey and everything that he's gone through, but cool stuff there. And again, just to reiterate this, the unlikelihood of this happening, of this perfect storm of youth sports, a need that's being met, right, where there's demand. I hadn't even thought about that angle of, he told me kind of that amazing story or some of the nice things that they'd received from, I'm not able to see my, kid or my grandkid play. And, you guys have given me a huge gift here. Wouldn't even have thought of that. But again, you're filling a nice void. You're solving an issue and you're able to make a great deal of money while doing it. And the sale to Dick's Sporting Goods, consummates that. But very cool. Good journey. Good interview with Ted. Really appreciate him. And that's going to do it for us here on this episode of You Seem Interesting. Really appreciate you guys checking out the show. As always, patreon.com/funnydanny or find past episodes. We get first run exclusivity, very exclusive to my Patreon customers. Everybody else, the rest of you, you get a couple week delay, but they're available to you. iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you find your podcast, @interest_pod. And again, keep tweeting us, keep letting us know in the comments who you want interviewed, who you'd like to see. And thank you again, as always. You guys make this show go. You make it fun. I really appreciate it. Until next time, I'm Danny Ruye, and you, yes, you seem interesting.